What's going on, everybody? I'm Jeff St. Pierre, and this is episode 147 of the Adult Education Podcast. Today, I'm speaking with author Emily Ballesteros. Thanks for checking out the show today. I appreciate you sharing some of your time with me. If this is your first time listening to the Adult Education Podcast, welcome to the family. So glad you're here. I would love it if you would subscribe to the show so you're updated for all future episodes. And always feel free to reach out and connect with me. The best way to do that is through Instagram. We are at Adult Education Podcast. You can see when new episodes are posted and you can DM me with any comments, questions, or suggestions for future topics or guests. I love to hear from you, love to hear what you want to learn more about, because I'm always trying to learn new things too. I said in my last episode that I had some good things lined up for the coming weeks, and that is true, but that was also before my local area was going through a tragedy. Some of you may know that I live in Baltimore, Maryland, and a massively important piece of our local infrastructure has been in the news lately. The Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed last week after being struck by a ship. It's been kind of a weird time around Baltimore as we try to pick up the pieces and get life back to some kind of normal. So that's why I didn't get an episode up and running last week. I hope you understand. Life has just been strange for these last 10 days or so. Part of the reason I wasn't able to get a new episode out was due to just being burnt out by the situation. I work for a radio station covering the news and trying to stay on top of everything that's been going on with the bridge collapse. I just did not have it in me to put the episode together. And that's fitting given the subject for this week's conversation. I'm speaking with author and corporate trainer Emily Ballesteros. She's got a new book out called The Cure for Burnout. There is no better time than now, trust me, to figure out how to take back control of your own life. Emily spent the last few years studying burnout and has worked with a lot of major corporations to ensure that their office culture is avoiding it as best they can. She's an expert on the subject. And, you know, we talk a lot about her background in our conversation and also why burnout became sort of a badge of honor for people. You know, we all know that person that likes to brag about how busy and tired they are. Like, why? Why is that something you want to brag about? I appreciate that she's putting this work out there into the world for all of us to learn from. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Emily Ballesteros.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Well, Emily, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for fitting me into your schedule.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to talk to me too.
And I do see the irony in talking about burnout when you're probably thinking I'd be less burnt out if I stopped doing all these interviews for this book, right?
Yeah, but I feel like I'm built for this career because it doesn't tire me. That part of it doesn't tire me. Other parts of it, recording an audiobook, you would not believe the endurance that took. But this kind of stuff, this is fine.
That is something interesting because, like, my primary job is I host a morning radio show, and then I do the podcast on the side, and I feel like I just talk all day. And if I ever were to write a book, I don't think that I would have it in me to do the audiobook for it.
Yeah, it's just a whole different. I like compare it to. Have you ever wakeboarded or water skied?
Yes. Yeah.
Something where you're being pulled by a boat. It's like using those muscles and the next day you just like can't even make a fist because they're so sore and you're only using these like really fine muscles that you don't normally use. That was just like, it was like a week of that. It was brutal. So by the end of it, you're like you would have just not even been able to move your fingers at all, like from how sore that one targeted muscle would be. So it was an experience.
What is a session like? Like, how long is one session over? Because, like, it would take me more than a week to read a book in general, and, like, let alone reading it and recording it and, like, doing different takes. So what is, like, one length of a session for you?
It was from, like, 9 to noon, or, well, 9 to 1. You take a break for lunch, and then you do 1 to 5.
Oh, my God.
On the last day, I think it was, like, 1 to 6 or something. So it just depends how fast they want you to read it. Like, they had us in and out. I'm sure some people take it a little slower, but, and it was only a like 250 page book. So it was only about 5 days of recording. People like the 800 page fantasy books. Geez, those people got it rough. And it's usually a series. So
yeah, that would take me a year to do an 800 page book, I think.
Yeah. Out Loud is different too. It's like, right. I don't know if you like romance books, but they're really fun to read. They're very explicit. Now I feel so bad for the people who have to read the audio in the studios with the producers on the phone and the sound engineer just listening from outside the booth. So they got it rough too.
It's like when you hear actors and actresses saying like love scenes when we're filming them are not fun. Like they are not exciting for us. So it's probably the same thing, like reading a romance novel. It's not nearly as exciting as reading it out loud. Yeah.
No, yeah. It feels like such a private experience when you're like watching a scene like that on TV or you're reading a scene in a book, but it's like not a private experience for it to be put together.
There is a phrase, we'll dive into the book now. There's a phrase in your book that really struck a chord with me because I don't understand people that wear burnout as a badge of honor. And there's a phrase that you put in there that says, work is what you do, not who you are. And I've had a lot of conversations recently with one of my coworkers who is near retirement. I think she's technically over the retirement age, but she's nearing retirement. And she keeps saying like, oh, well, I want to work till this year. And, you know, you'll change your mind at some point. And I'm like, the second I am financially stable enough to retire, I'm walking out that door and living my life. Like, I don't understand the people that think that the harder they work, the more stress they take on, all of that, it's like it somehow means more. I don't get it.
Yeah. I feel like it's just it sounds so sad, like a lack of alternative life, but like, you know, when you have something that you like doing more than work or people that you like spending time with more than your coworkers, you should be so happy to leave work. But yeah, same thing, like hearing people say like, oh, I love coming to work because it's like an escape. I'm like, fix your life. Work should not be an escape from your life. There's something else going on at work here. Like interesting to hear from people who just have different priorities and values and maybe not enough hobbies. You never know.
Yeah. I wonder in your research about burnout, because there's so many different levels of burnout and different types of burnout that you can look at it from. Did you find anything generational?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like in previous generations, the only hobby, and this is going to sound insensitive, but there are statistics to prove it. The only hobby was drinking. Mm. Like people worked really hard and then they drank. And that was pretty much it. Like a lot of like men didn't have maybe they would golf or go to cigar clubs, but like they didn't have hobby outlets. Like now, you know, guys are in the garage doing woodwork or metalwork, or like they can join groups and cycle. Like generationally, you see a difference in beliefs around how valuable things that aren't work are. And we're finally at a point where work is not worth what it used to be. And I think that a lot of that has to do with the like value of money nowadays and how people who work really, really hard a lot of times still don't make enough to afford the lifestyle that they want. So they're like, well, I'm not going to work as hard then. And so that's a whole like other cycle in itself.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I feel like there's, like you just mentioned, there's the boomer generation probably that still doesn't have the hobby thing nailed down. Like my dad is in there. My dad retired and has no idea what to do with himself. And he's been going back to work, quote unquote, part-time for like 37 hours a week. I'm like, that's a full-time job, Dad. Like that's not part-time work anymore. But that's the only thing that he knows. Like he doesn't have another outlet. But then I feel like you've got some of that Gen X and elder millennial area that probably does value the family time and values those other opportunities to do things. But then you've got the younger groups that are just trying so hard to break in and make any kind of money and any kind of impact in their debt to move forward, that I just feel like burnout means such a different thing to every single person out there.
Definitely. Have you gotten to talk about burnout with anybody else? And did they have anything to say about the generational differences?
You know, I haven't talked to anybody else about burnout. I saw your book come through and I was like, this sounds fascinating. Like, I really want to talk to Emily because I just think this is such an interesting topic. I've talked over the years about time and what is your time worth to you and spoken to different people about that. But burnout has never really been a topic that's come up, although I think everybody does deal with it in some capacity.
Yeah, definitely. It looks so different for everybody. And I feel like most people, like burnout just kind of became a trendy word during the pandemic. And before that, like when I experienced most of my burnout before it was trendy, you just feel really tired and almost like ashamed that you're so tired at whatever point in your career it is. Like, I shouldn't be this tired. Other people have it so much harder. Like other jobs are so much harder. It's just like gaslighting yourself out of thinking you're as tired as you are. And so, yeah, nowadays whether it's burnout or it's just general exhaustion from overall stress, yeah, everybody, I feel like, is trying to put words to, why do I feel this way? I feel like I should feel better.
That kind of goes back to the badge of honor thing, though, too, because I distinctly remember, as you said, before burnout became this trendy word during the pandemic, I distinctly remember having drinks with people after work and everybody bragging about how busy they were and how stressed they were. And it was like, oh, you think you're stressed? Like, but it was like a bragging. It wasn't like a, oh, man, my life's getting really hard. I've got to change something. It was more of like, look how awesome I am because I'm more stressed out than you are. And I don't understand that attitude of like the level, like the higher level stress and burnout you have, the cooler you are in some circles. And it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I think it's like people, I remember seeing something on Tumblr back in 2000 something. And it was like, sadness is not beautiful. Misery is not interesting. Like, and it just kind of put teenage me in my place where you are thinking like, oh, if I am like, you know, angsty or I feel bad and I make that a mood and I am that way, like that's interesting. And that's like, I have something. And most people would rather have something than nothing and be like neutral. And so they'll lean into the bad just to have something or to feel something. And so like they want to be sad or miserable. And that, and like, you need somebody along the way to tell you, like, it's not cute that you have been miserable for so long. Like, it would be better to be nothing than to be super, super miserable. So let's get to neutral and then let's get to happy. And then usually there's like that big expanse between people who are going through it and then people who are really happy. And usually people end up creating distance with others who are super unhappy when they want to be happy, because it, like, mood is contagious. And that's been proven in so many different studies that the people around you and how they feel and how they act ends up influencing you. So a lot of people, like happy, content people, kind of fall into one bubble. And then over time, that is more and more distant from like people who aren't having as good of an experience.
I want to go back a little bit into how you found yourself in this, because I find it fascinating that you were studying something that I've literally never heard of before, and I need you to explain this, but industrial yeah. organizational psychology. Please tell me more about this in particular, but then also like how doing that kind of led you into this path.
Industrial organizational psychology is like an MBA, but with a psychology emphasis instead of a like business finance emphasis. I knew I wanted to work on in like employee experience. I was always very interested in work-life balance. And I was interested in training, personal, professional development, that kind of thing. And this was the best degree I could find for it. And I knew I wanted to get my master's. And so you focus on more so than, you know, like financial accounting, you are focused on culture and executive coaching. And a lot of those people go into HR or business ownership, things of that nature. So that was my focus from the beginning. And then when I burned myself out, I was about to finish up my master's in IO psych. I was working in corporate training and development. And then I was experiencing this burnout and I was like, there has to be a solution. Like I work and I live in this world and I love this world and I am not seeing something that is super applicable to me. And I'm also part of the, grew up with social media. Like social media came out when I was kind of going into college, but I figured it out when it was, everybody was cringy on it. So I felt good at it by the time I was graduating from my master's. And so just kind of combined my background, my personal burnout experience, what I could see people needed based on online and doing market research. And then I decided I was going to just create a program myself that I know helped me at first. And then I decided that this could probably help other people, turned around and started working with one-on-one clients. And then that evolved. And now I primarily train companies around burnout management because employees are still incredibly burned out.
That is true. And I work for a major corporation here in the country that I will not name because I know they're very sensitive when I talk about them. But I find that a lot of companies, as much as they will talk the talk, they don't walk the walk. You know, they want their employees. They'll send out the monthly emails. They want their employees to make sure they're taking the time they need, the work-life balance. But when it actually comes down to it, they're still calling you at 9, 10 o'clock at night trying to get you to answer the phone, you know. So it's interesting that you get brought in by some of these major corporations. And I wonder, like, do you feel like the impact is there? Like, do you feel like you're really impacting these folks and teaching them how to move forward?
Yeah, I think that I believe in bottom up instead of top down approach. And I mean, it's really, really hard, understandably, for these organizations, that especially the really large ones. They could put a policy in place, but if they have bad leadership, they have bad managers, like, it's not trickling down. One micromanager on the way down, like, will stop that in its tracks. And so I like working with the individuals. And I feel like that makes a larger impact just as far as them determining what they want their relationship with work to be, what the culture of a small team could be. You can be a part of a disaster of an organization, but if you're on a really good team, that makes a good enough, that's a good enough employee experience for a lot of people to still stick it out. And so I see the impact on a person-to-person level. Organization-wide, it's easiest to convey messages, honestly, when I get to talk to an entire company and it happens to be a smaller company, because you know every single employee is hearing it and they're sharing the language now, and it's not going to come out of left field if somebody brings up a certain type of boundary. But with the really big organizations, that's when it feels like, are you screaming at a wall? If you're talking to, you know, thousands of people and half of them just have to be there because it's mandatory. So it just depends. But I would say for the most part, the individual is very receptive to making their life better.
That's great. I mean, I think for me personally, I had to have a moment myself. And it goes back a few years when one of my acquaintances, one of my coworkers, if you will, that worked in a different market, was offered a job in Chicago. And for him to get that job, somebody else was going to have to get fired for him to take. And he knew that person personally. And I remember him relaying the story to me. And he said, look, I don't want this job if it means this person's going to lose their job. And the company said to him that if it's not you, it's going to be somebody else. And it was that moment that I thought to myself, I was like, that's all of us. Like every single one of us. I don't want this to sound doom and gloom, because I think, you know, the world will continue. If one of us were to leave, the world continues no matter what the position is. But I think when you have that realization, it lets you understand that it's okay if you take some time for yourself. It's okay if you don't respond to that email immediately. Like, things are going to still function if you are not on it. Like, you don't have your notifications on your phone, so you're getting every single update that comes through. Like, I think everybody kind of needs that self-epiphany too. They can take all the information that you get, and that may lead them to that epiphany, but they need that moment where they really like sit down and they see it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, everybody, a business is a business. Yeah. It's designed to keep running and make a profit. It's not, its purpose isn't necessarily, some new modern businesses, they do, culture is a top priority for them. But as soon as push comes to shove and you're short financially, like, forget the culture. They have other priorities. So I don't know. It's so hard. And like building off of the making that business decision basically for them of, do we terminate somebody else and put you in their place kind of thing. I think companies put way too much of an onus on employees to make those kinds of calls, when it should be, a business should be enough of a leader to be like, they shouldn't put the responsibility on employees to manage their own burnout completely. In some ways, like, people are responsible for themselves, but you're trying to set a boundary at work or something because you would really like to leave at 5 p.m. And the company says, yes, leave at 5 p.m. They need to be telling everybody to, you know, start logging off at 4:30, 4:45, like, start wrapping things up and not be assigning them work that would require them to work later than 5 p.m. Like, the business can't be in conflict with what they're telling people to do and how they're telling people to behave. And a lot of times it is.
Emily, we've been talking a lot about work here, but I know burnout can come in many different forms. What we haven't really talked about is just really kind of the basic definition of burnout. Like, I think people understand what the word burnout means, but I'm curious, from your perspective, having become sort of an expert on this subject and written a book, what is your definition of burnout?
So put simply, burnout is prolonged exhaustion. It's, giving away more of your resources, just more of your time and energy than you can recuperate before you've got to wake up and do it again. And everybody knows that feeling of, I'm crawling into bed and I am dreading waking up the next morning to do this all over again. I don't see when my next break is coming. And I can't believe I have to live my life like this right now. And getting to that place where you feel kind of cornered and backed against a wall and you're just exhausted for one reason or another.
Yeah. And I know in your book, it really centers around these five pillars of burnout management. That's a big piece of your book. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So after doing a lot of market research, talking to as many burned out people as I could find.
Which must have been really exciting, right? Like, give me your burnouts. Really
it was like, I only had to make one post saying, if anyone's burned out, can we talk on the phone? I was looking for like, you know, 10, 15 people. I got dozens of people willing to talk about their experience, and which was great, because then you just get more and more intel from more and more industries. But yeah. So the five pillars are areas that came up repeatedly for them that they struggle with, and that if they were stronger would help prevent burnout, and that once they got better at, ended up mediating most of their burnout. And so those areas are mindset, time management, stress management, boundaries, and personal care. And a lot of times, if you really sit with those topics, like you look at them, people know what they struggle with. Like they know, okay, I have no boundaries and I'm really uncomfortable setting them. So that's probably, and my workload continues to grow because I'm not great with this. So I need to work on that. And so most people know what they need to work on of those five things.
I think I can look at this and find myself in each one of these categories in some way, but boundaries is the one that I feel like I've done such a good job at navigating. I'll tell you, one of my biggest pet peeves in life is I hate that other people can put things on my digital calendar. Like it makes me, like they can just drop a meeting in there and I'm like, whoa, you didn't even ask me if I was available. You're just putting it. So there was like a 2-month period where I blocked out my entire calendar and just made it impossible for anybody to book me, to the point where my boss was like, you really can't do that. Like, you're going to have to open up a little bit for us.
But
I was just like, man, you really can't just like, it's just so unfair. And I told you earlier, I host a morning radio show. So like my day starts at 4 a.m. And people will drop things on the calendar at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's like, you know, guys, that's not fair. That's not right, like, for me, you know? Yeah. So boundaries have been the one place I think that I've been really successful. And I think for me personally, looking at this list, if you can start setting those boundaries, I think the other dominoes start to fall.
Yeah, absolutely. And like in the case where you're describing, you know, having to set a boundary, because that would be such a long work day for you. That's usually boundaries people are setting are reasonable. And if you're in that meeting with your manager, showing them like your calendar and like, these are the hours that I'm currently working, what can we do to, you know, stick to these kinds of hours rather than, you know, a 10-hour day, 12-hour day? And that's usually reasonable, assuming that your manager is reasonable. I know very well that a lot of managers are not and will be like, I don't care, make it work. But you're usually asking for something reasonable. And if you like your job and you want to stay at it, then you're not working against them. You're working with them because you want to stay. They want you to stay too. They don't want to have to backfill your role. So you're usually asking for something reasonable to keep you there, because not because you're just trying to be difficult.
I think too, I've been joking with my wife that I have like parent burnout. And when I say that, what I mean is, because I know every parent goes through something, but I feel like every second of my day is planned out. Like there isn't a time in the day where like I can just kind of sit. I mean, this is my time to sit right now. And I'm choosing, because I really am interested in speaking with you, I'm choosing to use that time to speak with you. But like throughout many of my days, if like one thing changes by a couple of minutes, everything else like gets thrown off. And I think when you sit down and realize it, like those days where you really, you didn't run a marathon, but you feel out of breath, like at the end of the day, like that's one of the things that I've been struggling with. And that's where time management and personal care, I think, is where I'm starting to struggle, because I will put everything else before taking care of myself. Now I have a 3-year-old. You have to put the 3-year-old ahead of yourself. Thanks. So I'm not mad about that, but I think you understand where I'm going with this. Like, I just feel like there are some points in life where you really just find yourself in that hole.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we experience the least repercussions when we neglect ourselves. When we neglect work, there are repercussions. When we neglect kids, there are huge repercussions. When there's, you know, you neglect like your house, like your household duties, there's repercussions. So you end up having to like eat a salad with chopsticks because you just didn't do your dishes. Like there's repercussions everywhere, except for if we sacrifice our sleep. I mean, there's definitely repercussions for it, but like, it's only punishment to us. It's not a punishment to others. And people can justify that. And then they end up running themselves dry because of it.
I've seen some other conversations with you, and you talk about your lists that you have. And when I hear you talking about them, they give me anxiety, because that to me would burn me out. Like, I don't know how you operate at such a level. My hat is off to you for doing so. But I know social media is a big thing for you, and social media can often be just this like bottomless pit of nothingness. You know what I mean? So I find it interesting how much you lean into it given the topic that you're discussing.
Yeah. And honestly, from the outside, it might seem like, oh, she posts a lot or like maintains this thing. I still feel like I'm not posting three times a day. Some of these other people are posting like so incredibly often. And it makes sense for a lot of them because they have monetized being online. I don't make money from just being online, you know? And so I make money elsewhere. So it's more of just kind of like a tool. And so, but I think that no matter how much someone is doing or it appears somebody is doing, they're in that place, they still feel like I could be doing more. I should be doing more. And so that's that like mindset piece of burnout where I can either be satisfied with what I'm doing or, and like tell myself, okay, I'm doing enough. Like I'm doing so many other things. This isn't my like full-time job, like a lot of these people. So I'm doing enough. Or I could the entire time be kicking myself behind the scenes, which I know a lot of people are because I know a lot of the people who have big platforms and they're never relaxed. Mm. They always feel they're in debt to the platform. And it really is like mindset sounds like the most kind of floofy of the skill sets to have a good grip on. But mindset is what has gotten me to this point more so even than my time management, because some people manage their time really well and they destroy themselves in their mind, just in how they manage themselves. So it looks like time management, a lot of it's mindset.
I love that. How do you feel about, I mean, I know you like to use lists and people have mixed feelings about to-do lists. Like some people find it makes them empowered. Some people find it's depressing when you get to the end of the day and you haven't checked everything off. I personally love them and I put every minute detail on there. So even if like something simple, like, I don't even know, like washing the dishes, like if I can check that off, it makes me feel so good that I checked that off the list. Like what's your thought on to-do lists?
People can't see it, but I have my lists right here in front of me. And I have not just like my work list. I also have my life list, which is like things I know I need to prioritize in the day just to take care of myself, which sounds so like trivial, but it's like greens is on my list. I have my like greens here that I need to drink.
Is that your AG1 bottle?
I have something to say about AG1. This is Huel. It's my husband's.
Oh, Huel. Okay.
It's okay. It's pretty good. I've tried a lot of greens.
I'm not sponsored by anything. No one pays me for this.
Yeah. No free clout. This is just around, so I'm drinking it. Not sponsored. I wish it was, but no. I am so curious about AG1's influencer budget. Cause when I see all these huge influencers drinking AG1, I'm dying to know. So if I ever get sponsored by them, I'll let people know what the what they're sponsoring them for. So I have movement, like later I need to either like walk on my walking pad while I watch an episode of The Walking Dead or just like, I don't know, go on a walk outside or something. Like I put things down that I want. If it's not on the list, it doesn't exist is like my mentality. Mm. And so I know I'm putting my top priorities on the list and I know I'm getting to them, and whatever I don't get to, that's fine. I also just don't trust my memory that much. I don't know how people are like, oh, I need to go to the store and I'm just going to grab, you know, and they prattle off five things. I'm like, those, I would forget those the second I walk into the store. You need to write that down. When people don't write things down, maybe they just have a better memory than me.
It's possible. I have to write the things that I have to do every single day. I still write down because if I don't, I forget to do them. Like the daily tasks I have to do at work, I will forget to do them if they're not checked off.
Yeah. And there's that study that shows that doctors who have a checklist of everything to do, like around surgery, end up performing a lot better and not making like silly mistakes just because they spaced on something. And so I just believe that lists make you, or even putting like a sign on the door, like keys, wallet, phone, glasses, or like whatever it is you need to bring, even like list for work, list for going to the gym, list for like wherever else you frequent that you need to bring different things. I know some people would see that and think it's elementary, but I feel like by not relying on my brain in those ways and trying to keep those kinds of things in short-term memory circulation, I can really focus more energy on the things where I do have to think more deeply, because I'm not thinking about the shallow things. They're written down somewhere, or there's an alarm set for it, or there's like a sticky note reminding me to do it somewhere. And I feel like by modeling that, it's gotten my husband to do it. I feel like if you have kids, seeing that modeled of like, you don't have to just rely on yourself, your brain, like your short-term memory completely, and then forget things and get to soccer practice without your cleats, then everybody's mad. Like read the list when we leave. And it teaches them how to create lists that are effective for them. And I grew up, my mom is like list queen. Like she could bury me in a list and the amount of lists she's made in her lifetime. But it's learned behavior.
Absolutely. All right. So the $1 million question before we wrap things up here, the $1 million question, what are a couple of, I would say, I mean, nothing's minor to everybody. Everybody has their different opinion. But what are a couple minor things to you that we could change that maybe would help us relieve some of the burnout? Like, I'll give you an example. Something that really helped me, I turned off all notifications on my phone. So the only notifications I get are text messages or phone calls. That's it. Like, I had no Instagram, no social media, no email, nothing, just phone calls and text messages. And that was the biggest reliever for me, I think, that I've ever done. Because I didn't feel tethered to that phone every second of the day waiting for something to happen. So that's kind of what I'm talking about. Like, maybe a minor change that somebody can do.
Yeah, that's really good. I like having the notifications off, especially if you're somebody who's opening your email before you've even gotten out of bed. That's like, you guys gotta, and I do that too. I'm guilty of that too. But every time I do it, I'm like, this is disgusting. I can't believe I'm reading emails in bed. This is not how I want to live my life. Like, I'm setting a terrible example. It's bad for the brand. I got to get out of bed, at least brush my teeth before I read my emails. Jeez. So if that's you too, I hope reality check to you as well. But I would say small things you can do, have a consistent sleep and wake time, especially if you're somebody who does the revenge bedtime procrastination, where it feels like at night is the only time nobody's asking for anything from you. Nobody expects anything from you. And you end up on your phone or staying up doing a hobby, that ends up compromising your sleep. So consistent sleep and wake time. If possible. And I know that it's so much more fun to be on your phone and it feels like I finally have something for myself, but we need sleep more than we need, like, our poor bodies. They need sleep more than it needs to scroll online. I would say if you don't already spend time on an interest or a hobby, start small. Like, even if, like, I'll set a 20-minute timer to read and to instead of, you know, doing something else, because I love reading, but it's so hard to prioritize something like that. But by including that, even in a really, really busy day, it feels like my life still belongs to me in this way. And I'm still doing things that are of interest to me. My entire day isn't just responsibilities, because when your life is just responsibilities, that sucks. Like, that's not fun. Nobody really wants to wake up to a full day of responsibilities. And we didn't used to have this many responsibilities. Life used to be simpler and it didn't feel quite as bad. And so you have to prioritize and fight to include even just like the small things that you do for yourself that make your life feel like you're still living it for you. I would say every single time you're asked something, reply with, can I check my calendar and get back to you? You do not have to do it in that exact moment. A lot of times, give yourself the space to consider something thoughtfully and then circle back and let them know if you are available for that. Very rarely do we have to do everything in the moment, or like, even if you're just asked a question, like, can I just sit on that for a couple minutes and then get back to you? Like, my brain is not ready to answer that right now. You can ask for some space and then come back and respond more thoughtfully.
I haven't finished your book yet, but I know the end of your book, the last part is titled Making Life Livable Again. And I just love that phrase. And I hope that people do pick up the book. I hope people are able to find some inspiration in this. Emily Ballesteros, the book is called The Cure for Burnout, How to Find Balance and Reclaim Your Life. Thank you so much for doing this. Thank you for fighting the good fight and sharing your knowledge with us. Is there a place people should go? I know you're very active on social media. Where do you want people to go if they want to find out more about you?
Yeah. So if you're on social media, my handle on Instagram and TikTok is Emily B. Ruth, EmilyBRuth. And from there, you can link to my website, which is just www.emilyballesteros.com. And then there's information on the book. I have a people pleasing pamphlet. If anybody's a people pleaser, I can save you. And then
I can save you.
Yeah, there is hope. I can make you, the opposite of a people pleaser is not an asshole. There is so much middle ground there and I can get you there. So that's where primarily you can find me.
I love it, Emily. Thank you so much for your time. Again, thank you for the book and I wish you the best.
Thank you so much. Thank you for talking to me today.
Good luck getting that AG1 endorsement.
I know, seriously.
All right, I'll see you later.
Bye.
Big thank you to Emily Ballesteros for her time. Her book, The Cure for Burnout, How to Find Balance and Reclaim Your Life, is available now wherever you get your books. And thank you to all of you for listening today to the Adult Education Podcast. Until next time, be well.